WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Happy hump day. That's right, it is Wednesday, April 29th, 2015, and you are tuned in to Current Sports with me, Al Martin. We have a great show in store for you all today. On today's show, you get to hear from a pretty cool team that has been certainly tearing it up on four wheels for about 5 years now, folks. They're entitled the Lansing Derby Vixens, Mid-Michigan's own roller derby team. That's right, I got a chance to hit the skates with the team yesterday over at the Summit. You get to hear about the sport for those of you who may not know much about it. You get to hear from a few of the players on why they started to join, to even try the sport in general. All of that and so much more. You don't want to miss that. We'll also talk about the Detroit Red Wings and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Game 7 is tonight at 7 p.m. Can you believe that? We'll give you our predictions on that game. We'll sort of break it down. We'll also talk Spurs and clips from last night, Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather, and some interesting news concerning one big name in UFC fighting. All of that and so much more, as well as taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners again for this Wednesday, April 29th. All right, let's start with the Detroit Tigers. They fell to the Minnesota Twins yesterday, 3-2, the final of that one, while struggling to hit off Twins pitcher Mike Pelfrey. Now, Pelfrey pitched 7 innings, striking out 7 and allowing only 3 hits and 1 earned run. Now, Anibal Sanchez fell to 1-3 on the season, despite earning a quality start on the mound. Sanchez pitched 7 innings, allowing 3 earned runs on 9 hits in the loss. Well, tonight is the night, folks. That's right, Game 7. Between the Detroit Red Wings and the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight, with both their respective seasons on the line, it has been a back-and-forth series between the Wings and Lightning, neither team winning two straight games, which makes the 7 game almost really unpredictable. This whole entire series has really been unpredictable and kind of up in the air. Now, Wings goaltender Peter Mrazek is looking to bounce back from a 5-2 loss in Game 6. Game 7, again, starts tonight at 7:30 p.m., with the pregame beginning, of course, at 7 p.m. All right, as the Detroit Red Wings head into their biggest game of the season, they'll be without one of their best players in Nicholas Cronwall. Now, the NHL Department of Player Safety announced last night that Cronwall would be suspended for, quote, launching into a hit on Tampa Bay forward Nikita Kucherov. Now, quote, we disagree with the decision. That was said by Red Wings general manager Ken Holland, and that's what he told the Detroit Free Press. He didn't want to make any further comment on the suspension. Man, that's going to be interesting, and what a loss for the Wings tonight. It was certainly, they certainly could use Cronwall tonight in this Game 7. All right, quick NBA wrap-up from last night. The Houston Rockets, they knocked out the Dallas Mavs out of the playoffs in Game 5 last night behind 28 points from James Harden and a double-double from Dwight Howard. Howard posted his best all-around game of the series with 18 points, 19 rebounds, 4 blocks, and 4 steals. They will face the winner of the LA Clippers and San Antonio Spurs series in the next round. And speaking of the Spurs and Clippers, the Spurs won Game 5 last night against the Clips behind a balanced offensive attack and a few clutch shots by Boris Diaw. Now, 6 Spurs hit double figures, led by Tim Duncan with 21 points and 11 rebounds, and Kawhi Leonard with 18 points and 9 rebounds. The series heads back to San Antonio tomorrow, with the Spurs holding on to a 3-2 lead and looking to close it out on their home floor. WNBA Phoenix Mercury star Brittany Griner has entered a domestic violence diversion program after being arrested with charges of suspicion of assault and disorderly conduct because of an argument with her fiancé, Tulsa Shock player Glory Johnson, on Wednesday, April 22nd. Now, Griner pleaded guilty to the disorderly conduct charge, but her plea will be held as she completes 26 weeks of domestic violence counseling in Goodyear Municipal Court in Arizona. All right, more players getting into more things. All right, players at the University of Alabama continue to get in trouble in the offseason. Alabama senior cornerback Cyrus Jones was arrested late Tuesday night in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, on two counts of third-degree domestic violence in the form of harassment and criminal mischief. Now, Jones is the fourth Crimson Tide player to be arrested this spring. Defensive tackle Jonathan Taylor, safety Geno Smith, and running back Taron Jones are the others. And more players getting into more stuff. 27-year-old John Jones is the first UFC champion in history to be stripped of a title due to disciplinary reasons. Now, on Monday, April 27th, Jones fled the scene of a hit-and-run accident after hitting a pregnant woman and leaving her with a broken arm in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Now, on Tuesday, UFC officials took action of stripping Jones of his title after he was charged with a felony. Now, the UFC officials also announced that he is suspended indefinitely and pulled him from the title defense against Anthony Johnson to take place on May 23rd in Las Vegas. All right, and last but certainly not least, in an odd story, in an interview with Yahoo Sports trainer Freddie Roach said Manny Pacquiao ran away from home at the age of 12 when he caught his father eating his pet dog. Pacquiao's family struggled with poverty so much in the Philippines that when he was a child, Manny's father cooked the family dog for food. My goodness. Now, Manny realized what had happened. He ran away from home and began to live on the streets. Whoa. All right. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Again, our phone lines are open 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Shoot us a comment there. I'll read it live here on the air. Or even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Without further ado, how about we start the show? Yes, and that's how we start today's current sports. Welcome to the show. As always, I am the man behind the mic, your host, Al Martin. And I wanted to start today's show by, of course, saluting the great Kurt Gibson. We revealed yesterday to start our radio show that Gibby is going to be going through a hard time right now. But you better believe he's going to fight it. Kurt Gibson diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. The 1988 National League MVP revealed the news yesterday in a statement released by Fox Sports Detroit saying, quote, "I have faced many different obstacles in my life and have always maintained a strong belief that no matter the circumstances, I could overcome those obstacles. While this diagnosis poses a new kind of challenge for me, I intend to stay true to my beliefs. With the support of my family and friends, I will meet this challenge with the same determination and unwavering intensity that I have displayed in all of my endeavors in life. I look forward to being back at the ballpark as soon as possible." Again, Gibby at 57 years old, diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. Now, of course, that montage you just heard was, of course, Kurt Gibson's 1988 World Series home run, which, of course, occurred in Game 1 of the 1988 World Series on October 15th of that year at Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles. Such a historic moment. I mean, you can even argue that that play is the most memorable play in all of Major League Baseball. Of course, Gibson was pinch hitting for the Los Angeles Dodgers in the bottom of the ninth inning. He had injuries to both of his legs. And then, again, as you just heard, the improbable, you know, what really was a topsy-turvy, really improbable season for the Dodgers. That moment, you know, was the impossible, folks. I mean, unbelievable call right there, as you just heard. And he hit a two-run walk-off home run off the Oakland Athletics' Dennis Eckersley that won game one for the Dodgers, 5-4 the final of that game. And the Dodgers, again, they were considered underdogs throughout most of that 1988 postseason, and they go on to win the World Series. How about that? So Gibby's most memorable moment. And now, again, you know, life collides in the world of sports so often. And, again, Kirk Gibson being diagnosed with Parkinson's, I really wish him the best. Our thoughts and prayers are with him and his family. Folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We've got a great show in store for you today, filled with a lot of discussion and a lot of enlightenment, to be honest with you all, because, you know, last night I got the privilege of actually going out to the Summit, which is a really cool arena. Of course, they have gymnastics that are held there. They have an ice rink inside of there. They have a skate rink that's inside of there. Tennis. I mean, it's an unbelievable sports complex right actually next to, of course, Aim High, which is a basketball complex, a really big complex that a lot of people visit over there. But, you know, the Summit is actually the home of the Lansing Derby Vixens. Is where they practice, is where they you know, now play their games. It's actually a new home for them because you know, they just actually started practicing and playing there a few months ago, to my understanding. So I got the chance, you know, because they're actually my guest on this week's Current Sports TV show. They will join me in studio tonight at 6 p.m. And again, folks, if you want to be a part of that live studio audience, just like each and every Wednesday night, Wednesday evening here, at the WKAR-TV studios. You can do that by simply going to WKAR.org, but they will be in the house. They'll be pretty deep as well. And I got the chance to of course, pre-produce a segment that will run before the interview starts tonight, and went out there and got a chance to really get a peek in on practice, to see how intense it is, and to really just learn about the sport, because I had no idea how the rules went, how the scoring goes, nothing of that sorts before I went out there with, of course, my producer, Tim Elkins of Current Sports TV, and we got a chance to really just see it firsthand. Really remarkable stuff. Really remarkable stuff. Really intricate, to be honest with you. There's a lot of moving parts as to how to score in the sport, as far as penalties go, all that, you know, line changes, all that sort of thing. And again, we will dive in on it on this week's Current Sports TV. Again, you'll get a chance to catch that sit down if you can't make it to the live taping tonight. Of course, we air Current Sports TV each and every Thursday night at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. But, you know, we're going to give you a sneak peek into, you know, the Lansing Derby Vixens and how good this team is, and to the motivation behind a lot of these women who decide to play this sport, which is really remarkable. So we'll play that feature during our second segment of today's show. You don't want to miss that. We'll also, of course, be talking about John Jones. Oh, boy. I mean, just looking at our headliners today, I mean, I rattled off, what, three stories that involve athletes, you know, in trouble with the law. You know, away from the, you know, away from the octagon, away from the basketball court or the gridiron. So it's just like, come on, man, you got to get it together. Got to get it together, guys. I mean, with John Jones, Cyrus Jones, and of course Brittany Griner, all in trouble, and all of that news breaking either late last night or this morning. So just troubling stuff. And concerning John Jones, who's really become quickly the face of UFC, which is a really remarkable sport, and he's really been top dog. And you know, there's been rumors that he's been on cocaine and had to go to rehab for that. And now, again, what, just a month away from a fight against Anthony Johnson that was scheduled to take place on May 23rd in Las Vegas, he is now suspended due to a hit and run. We'll discuss all of that and so much more, folks. But I want to start today's show by, of course, talking about the Detroit Red Wings. Of course, tonight is the night. Game 7, Wings versus Lightning. How about that? I mean, I always say, you know, those two words are the two most coveted, exciting words in all of sports. Game 7, it doesn't get any better than that. I mean, two teams fighting for their seasons, everything on the line. Win or Go Home. You gotta love it, folks. Entertaining stuff. And this series has just been so, as you know, as I stated to start this week, I mean, just so unpredictable. You can't really predict what is going to happen game in and game out when the Wings and Lightning take the ice, folks, because it's been like that. I mean, it's been so back and forth, topsy-turvy. The series is going Red Wings, Lightning, then Red Wings, Lightning, and then back to the Wings, then back to the Lightning. It's just been so up and down, folks. But the Wings are going to certainly, they're taking a bit of a shot to their efficiency for tonight, seeing as though, you know, as they head into their biggest game of the year, they will be without their best defensive player, Nicholas Cronwall. Now, the NHL Department of Player Safety announced last night that Cronwall would be suspended for launching into a hit on Tampa Bay forward Nikita Kucherov. And then, of course, many people disagreeing with its decision. Of course, Red Wings general manager Ken Holland saying that, quote, we disagree with the decision. And, you know, many beat writers out there who cover the Wings and cover hockey in general really analyzing that hit and saying, I don't know about that one. And you know, I agree. You know, Isaac and I had talked on yesterday's show about the hit and whether or not the NHL would lower the boom and really discipline Cronwall for the hit. And I kind of said, when looking at the hit, I mean, momentum just kind of carried him into Nicholas Cronwall. And it's one of those things where, okay, if we're going to collide, I'm going to try to, you know, put you on the ice. Simple as that. But the thing about it is, you know, when you look at the hit, and this is the reason why I think that the NHL decided to suspend Cronwall, is that in any sport, no, not even just talking hockey here, folks, if you hit anywhere near the head, that is a very sensitive region to the body now because of what we're starting to know with concussions now and the detrimental effects that concussions could have later on in your playing career. I mean, really riveting stuff. So if you target, well, if you come anywhere close to hitting near someone's head, you better believe that there is going to be some sort of side eye and possibly a higher chance of disciplinary action when looking at a play like that. Point blank, period. And I think that was the end all to be all as to why Cronwall, you will not be seeing him play tonight on the ice. So this is a big hit, though, because when you're missing Nicholas Cronwall, I mean, you are missing the number one defenseman on the team. When you look at across the board and really analyze each and every player and how many minutes they played game in and game out throughout this series, Cronwall, he logs the most minutes on the team. And that's for a reason, folks. He is a factor when he's out there on the ice. So, you know, now the Wings are really going to have to shuffle their defense. I've heard, you know, reading reports here and there, looking at ESPN, the Wings are possibly looking at shuffling their defense to possibly split up Danny DeKeyser and Kyle Quincy to even things up there. So, I mean, it's going to hurt the Wings. We all know that. But at the end of the day, there are a few keys to the night that the Wings have to save face for if they plan on getting out of this series and moving on to round two. Now, yeah, it's a tall order, folks. I mean, you're playing the Tampa Bay Lightning, one of the leagues. When you look at the regular season, I mean, they were among the league leaders when it came to scoring. And, you know, when you look at it, how well they've played at home in Tampa Bay, of course, Tampa Bay has surely had their struggles on the road. But when they are at home, it's a different story. It's almost like a different team. So now the Wings have to go on the road in a game seven. The stakes are very, very high and have to knock off a very formidable team in the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's a tall order, folks. It is a tall order. But for me to sit up here and say if the Wings can't do that, I don't know. I got to be honest with you guys. Who knows what's going to happen tonight? It's been that unpredictable of a series. And for you, again, I said yesterday, I mean, if you're out there sitting back and you're, you know, listening to this and saying, I think the Wings are going to win tonight, I think they're going to lose, whatever prediction you may have, I mean, nobody knows. I mean, because there's been no sort of consistency throughout this series. Now, I do believe there are a few keys to the night that if the Wings do, you know, check these off, I can see them winning this series, folks. I certainly can. And, you know, you got to take into account the emotion also of a game seven. When everything is on the line, pressure can either make diamonds or bust pipes. At the end of the day, some teams love that pressure. It elevates their game. You know, having Nicholas Cronwall out, I mean, maybe that sharpens that focus for this team, Mike Babcock and his troops tonight. Who knows? But there are a few things that if you are to look at any sort of consistency throughout this series, must happen for the Wings to have any chance at winning tonight. First off, again, I think they got to be aggressive and get out to an early start. I think that Ben Bishop, you know, this being his first playoff series, along with Peter Mrazek has clearly, at the goaltending position, outplayed Ben Bishop. But you got to attack him because he's let in a few soft goals throughout this series, and he hasn't looked really 100% confident. If the Wings are aggressive, if they are able to get enough shots on him and be the aggressor and get out to an early start, get out to an early lead, I could see the Wings winning this game. Because if you look at, you know, this series so far, the team who is aggressive from the start and the team who usually scores first and has that early momentum usually pulls out with the W. That's just how it's been, with the exception of one or two games. Now, the Wings do have to watch out for Tyler Johnson, though, because he's been one of those players that has definitely stung the Wings multiple times throughout this series. If you look at it across the board, I mean, he has scored twice in each of the Lightning's three wins. Twice, folks. We're not talking about one goal, but twice in each of the Lightning's three wins, and actually leads the league in postseason goals this far. I mean, Tyler Johnson is in a complete zone, and the Wings have to figure out how to stop him. And Peter Mrazek, I think that overall, if I had to grade Peter Mrazek's outing so far for the Wings, and he's only 23 years old, he's a rookie in the NHL, his very first playoff series. If I had to give Peter Mrazek a grade, heck, I would give him around, what, B+, A-, in that sort of range. I think Peter Mrazek has been pretty solid for the Wings. Even with, looking at the last loss that they had against the Lightning, I just thought those were just defensive lapses. And Peter Mrazek, I mean, he tried all. I mean, some of those goals are just goals you just kind of throw up your hands and say, "Ha, what are you going to do?" You know? But overall, Peter Mrazek has been relatively solid for this team. And quite impressive, seeing as though this is his first playoff series, folks. He's looked very cool, confident. Cool and confident, to be honest with you. And he has to bring that same sort of demeanor into a Game 7. Now, another thing to look at is Henrik Zetterberg, because he is a guy who is known for the Wings, historically, as being a scoring juggernaut. That's who Henrik Zetterberg has been. But it seems as though ever since the All-Star break for Henrik, he hasn't been able to have it. I don't know what it is about him. I mean, he has no goals in this series thus far. He's had two goals in his final 29 regular season games. Just two goals, folks. Two goals, that's it. And, in looking at history for when it comes to Henrik Zetterberg, he has played a total of 22 playoff series and scored a goal in at least one of them. So that streak could end tonight, folks. I don't know. I think Henrik Zetterberg has to get it going. And, don't be surprised if he does get it going. I mean, I always say, again, when it comes to that pressure motive, I mean, sometimes pressure brings out the best in people, and maybe Henrik Zetterberg wakes up here in this series. But we'll see. But I want to ask Isaac now. I want to invite Isaac to the show, current sports, radio engineer. Isaac, what do you think about this whole Cronwall suspension, and do you think it was warranted? Were you surprised at all that the hammer was laid down on him?
You know, I really was surprised, because Cronwall has never been suspended before in his NHL career. For as many big hits as he gives out, he has not been suspended. So I was surprised to see the NHL punish it, and I didn't think it was that bad of a hit. Like you said, a lot of momentum, and when they collided, might as well take him out a little bit. He didn't really launch into it, but there was that sort of head-to-head or elbow-to-head, forearm-to-head contact. So I see where they're coming from, but I'm still surprised about it.
Yeah, I was too. I mean, yeah, and if you really look at that play, again, it's just one of those things, momentum, he's on the ice. There's really no chance for him to avoid, Kucherov. And at the same time, hockey is a physical sport. Okay, if we're going to make contact, I might as well make the best of it. So, I mean, again, looking at it, I mean, he didn't launch into him. He didn't leave his feet during the hit. I don't know. We'll see. But I get where the NHL is trying to come from when it comes to concussions here. Because, again, anytime you get anywhere close to that head, you better believe that the NHL is going to take another look at it, or any sport for that matter. Folks, what do you think? Do you think the suspension for Nicholas Cronwall is just? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I would also love to hear your predictions on tonight's Game 7. Again, 7:30 p.m., Wings on the road against the Tampa Bay Lightning. What do you think will happen? Me, per se, I'm still sticking with my guns. I think the Tampa Bay Lightning will pull out a very close and a very gritty game. I could possibly see this one going to overtime. We've seen a lot of magic in the NHL playoffs when it comes to Game 7s. And I believe, Isaac, you predicted, the Lightning yesterday as well, right?
I did, yeah. I don't see the Lightning losing at home. And you talk about the lack of consistency in terms of and predictability this series. The only predictability has been games going back and forth, just alternating. So in that case, the Red Wings would win. So
Right.
Yeah, let's keep our fingers crossed that continues.
Right, exactly, because it's been Wings, Lightning. So yeah, if that trend continues, hey, we'll see. We could certainly be eating our words tomorrow. We hope so. I mean, hopefully the Wings can pull out some magic here and move on. Only time will tell. All right, before we get to our feature for today's Current Sports, I want to bring up Tuesday night NBA wrap-up really briefly here because, again, you know, I got home pretty late last night because our shoot with the Lansing Derby Vixens was from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And as you can imagine, of course, when dealing with the schedules of so many players on that team, I mean, 50 players on that team, they all have respective lives where they're in different careers of some sort. So, you know, the practice is pretty late last night. So we went out there pretty late and didn't get home until late. And then by the time I got home, the Mavs and the Rockets game was already done. And, of course, the Mavs are going home. The Houston Rockets moving on in that series. And the second game was actually a very unbelievably entertaining game. And this whole series, for that matter, has been ridiculously entertaining. Of course, between the San Antonio Spurs and the Los Angeles Clippers. Went down to the wire, just a back-and-forth battle. And, you know, it's really a shame when you look at it that, you know, one of these teams won't be advancing to the second round. That's just how, you know, the stars kind of aligned when it came to this series, that the Spurs and the Clippers both had to meet each other. But it's been unbelievably entertaining basketball to watch these two teams go to work. And, you know, going back to it, because I predicted that, you know, the Clippers would win this series, because I think it's just been far too long now that the Clippers have settled for mediocrity and have gone out far too early in the playoffs with the amount of talent that is on that team. I mean, you talk about guys like Chris Paul. I love Matt Barnes. I mean, Blake Griffin, Jamal Crawford. I mean, they have a lot of weapons on that team. And really, Isaac, in my opinion, there is no excuse for this team to constantly bid adieu so early in the NBA playoffs. So for me, I mean, the San Antonio Spurs are just coming off a championship. But looking at, you know, the different moving pieces here, the biggest piece for me was Tony Parker not being 100%. I didn't think that if you had a Tony Parker who was laboring to a certain degree, I didn't think that the Spurs would have a chance at beating. I thought they would have a chance, but I didn't think they would have a good chance at beating the Clippers. I thought that you know, Chris Paul would certainly take advantage of that matchup and really just go haywire, which he has been. I mean, he's been playing relatively well throughout this series, but I didn't think it would be this close. And the Spurs are just doing what the Spurs do. Down the wire in that game, I watched the entire second half of that game. And I tell you what, in that fourth quarter, guys step up that you don't normally expect to step up. And that's just the mantra of the Spurs. Who expected, you know, Boris Diaw? I think, you know, he went on like an unbelievable scoring stretch. Two buckets that were just absolutely crazy jumpers with the shot clock running down. And one of them where he just kind of just looked at the other end of the court, realized the shot clock was around with 5 seconds, decides, okay, I got to throw this up. Throws it up, nothing but the bottom of the net. He hits another big three-pointer to stretch out the lead. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And then you got Tim Duncan. I think this dude needs to, you know, I need to see Tim Duncan's birth certificate because he's playing like he's a rookie in the league right now. I mean, he always brings it and finds ways to score and impact the game. Had a huge block on Blake Griffin that totally just sucked the air out of everyone in that Staples Center arena last night. Impressive stuff from the Spurs, Isaac.
Yeah, it really was. And like you talked about with the Clippers, you know, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin having matchups they could potentially take advantage of. Blake Griffin, I mean, Tim Duncan is one of the best defensive power forwards of all time.
And he's so underrated when it comes to his defense, I think. Yeah.
He really is. But Blake Griffin has the athleticism. Now he can step out, hit that mid-range jumper with consistency. And when you look at the stats, neither Chris Paul nor Blake Griffin has really disappointed. The difference is the Spurs have the next man up mantra, you know. Patty Mills, game two, I believe,
right,
shot 6 of 6 from the free throw line in just the fourth quarter in overtime, finished with 18 points. This game, Boris Diaw, 8 points in the fourth quarter, including some of those just huge shots that you mentioned. So, yeah, the Spurs have depth, and Greg Popovich is really one of the best coaches in NBA history. I would put him as the top.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I think Greg Popovich, I mean, he's such an unbelievable basketball mind. And the way, you know, what I admire so much about Greg Popovich, because in a league, in professional sports in general, a lot of athletes, you know, when you get good at the professional level, you just start to develop an ego. And for Greg Popovich to have Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, Kawhi Leonard, who's becoming a star in his own right. Just those guys. Tony Parker. I mean, having those guys and being able to get all of those superstars in a way to buy into a team mentality, that's a tall order. That is a tall order. And to see how he – and sometimes you'll see Greg Popovich just completely chew in, like Tom Izzo-like chew in to his players. And these are grown men at the end of the day. These aren't college kids at the end of the day. I mean, these are grown men that have egos, and they listen to Pop. I mean, they take in what he's saying, and you get results out there in the basketball court. It is unlike any other system, any other franchise in the National Basketball Association, and it's a true testament as to why this team is so good. And it's unbelievable. So I really think, right now, at the end of the day, the Clippers certainly do have a chance to win this series now. It's so back and forth in this series, but it's going to be very, very tough now because I know with the Spurs have a 3-2 series lead now. All they need is one more game. It's going to be tough for the Clippers to win two against the defending NBA champions. They can do it, but if the Clippers don't, I think there has to be a big move in the offseason, Isaac. I don't know what it's going to be, but there will be a big move, whether it be letting somebody big go or acquiring somebody big to help out, because there are no more excuses not to make deep runs in the playoffs. And I really think it starts with the bench for the Clippers because you need more production from guys like Austin Rivers and guys like Jamal Crawford, who had a slow start to this series. And there's a reason why I think the Clippers are trying to find themselves now, trying to climb out this hole. Because I think that Chris Paul and Blake Griffin have been relatively brilliant throughout this series. I don't know if you agree.
Totally agree. I think the Clippers bench has been there weak portion of the team the entire season. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jamal Crawford, former sixth man of the year, just hasn't been he's been aging. I mean, we talked about Tim Duncan visiting the Fountain of Youth and, his annual trip, and he just keeps on staying at the top of his game, being one of the best power forwards in the NBA. Jamal Crawford started to decline a little bit. And another thing with Popovich that I have to give him credit for, we talked about how ugly the hack-a-shack strategy is, but he's gotten DeAndre Jordan
right
off of the court. And
yep.
It's a huge difference. DeAndre Jordan averaged 15 rebounds a game, shot 70%. I mean, when he's off the court, the Clippers are a different team, especially defensively.
Yeah, you may hate it. You may hate the hack of Jordan, the hack of whoever. But at the end of the day, it does work. And Greg Popovich has been a main component and one of those main coaches who has used it to his advantage. That's a very good point, Isaac. Again, folks, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, you'll get to hear from the Lansing Derby Vixens. That's right, Mitt Michigan's own roller derby team. You don't want to miss that feature. We'll also have plenty of other discussion and conversation and debate later on in the show. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, the Lansing Derby Vixens are Lansing's only WFTDA roller derby league, featuring skaters, referees, and volunteers from all walks of life. Now, they believe in empowering women and promoting fitness, a healthy body image, community spirit, and the hashtag Love Lansing movement. Now, formed in April of 2010, the Vixens began as a group of women with an idea that roller derby is an essential part of any cool city. So they strapped up on skates and pads and helmets and got down to the business of building a team from the ground up. Now, though a young league, the Vixens are committed to creating a nationally competitive team of women dedicated to the sport, their team, and their city, which is, of course, yes, Lansing. Now, I got the opportunity to head out to a Lansing Derby Vixen practice to learn all about the sport. Now, who you are about to hear from is Aileen Ladurl, and they have some pretty cool nicknames, too. Gina Rome And, of course, her nickname is Rome. Actually, her nickname back in the day, which she has changed now, was Rome is Burning. How about that? And TNT-ish, who is a junior coach in the field of roller derby for the Derby Vixens. They all talk about how they got involved with the sport and just how the sport is organized and how it's scored and all of that jazz. Here's Aileen.
There are two 30-minute halves in a game, and each 30-minute half is broken down into what's called jams, and each jam is one period of play, and it can be up to 2 minutes long. So at the beginning of a jam, there's four blockers from each team on the track, unless there's penalties, which happens sometimes.
Right.
And they start in front of what's called the jam line, and then there are two jammers that start behind the jam line, one from each team. And they're designated by a star on their helmet. They wear a helmet cover that can be changed. And so when the whistle blows, the jammers have to push their way through the pack and then lap the whole pack and then do it all again. And after they make their initial pass, once they start doing it again, they start to score points. And you get 1 point for each opposing blocker that you pass, and then a fifth point if you lap the jammer. So it's a lot of work to get 5 points per pass. And each blocking pack out there is playing offensive and defense at the same time.
And how many periods are there in this whole thing?
There's two, so two halves. And then however many jams fit. The first jammer that makes it through the pack on what's called their initial pass is called lead jammer. And they have control over the jam, and they can call it off at any time by placing their hands on their hips. And then that's a strategic thing because it's clock management and not letting the other team score points.
And speaking of the clock, finally, how many minutes are per period?
30 minutes per period.
30 minutes per period. So, you know, when I'm sitting here looking at this, I mean, it's so physical. And it's rare where you see women in this type of atmosphere. I mean, hitting each other, you know, it's kind of like football. I mean, talk about the physicality of this sport. And is this a way to sort of release some tension that you guys may have in your daily lives?
For some people, probably. I mean, everybody has some rough days, and it's nice to be able to come to practice and leave whatever's happening in your life behind you. But it's a sport. I mean, there's just full contact sports out there. Like, there's women's rugby, there's women's soccer, which is pretty physical, water polo. It's just the way that the sport has evolved. I know that women's hockey is becoming a lot more popular, and that doesn't have as much contact as we're talking about here, but I don't know, it's really fun to be able to be in that physical space and own where your body is and how you can control where you're what you're doing.
Do you think this is also a battle cry to let the guys know that, hey, we can get physical too?
I would say there is men's derby, actually,
right.
Which is interesting.
Is.
Yes.
Wow.
It is much smaller than women's derby, and it's a very different game. But women definitely predominantly play the sport. And I think that it's started out as a place where a lot of women came to be with other women that were like them and to create an awesome community for us.
Talk about your team. I mean, the Lansing Derby Vixens is a team I've been, you know, really irking to get my hands on and finally cover you guys because you guys are doing some incredible things. As far as the full spectrum of the sport, I mean, I know there's a lot of teams in Michigan. I know the Detroit team you were telling me is ranked,
where? Top 30.
Top
sure.
30, okay.
Gotcha.
Talk about your team and the success you guys have had over the years.
Our team, it's awesome to see. We started 5 years ago, about last month, so this is our fifth season. And in five seasons, we've changed from just being like a cusp of an idea of something that we want to do something really cool in Lansing and make the Lansing community even more awesome into being a ranked team in the Women's Flat Track Derby Association, which we call WFDA, and to being 103rd, I think, in the world. I haven't checked the rankings in a couple months, but they come out every quarter, and that is a big deal to be that good in the world.
Is that the highest ranking you guys have ever had?
I think about 103 is the highest we've ever been. We're shooting to break the top 100.
Okay.
And it's just fun to be able to play teams from different states, different cities, even different countries. So we play in Canada sometimes. We drive down to Kentucky. We drive up to Houghton.
Wow.
There's a lot of travel.
I actually had never roller skated or played any sport ever before.
Wow.
So it's weird that I even like thought it would be a thing I could do. I actually was living with someone in college who interned with someone who's already on the team, and so then she was like, hey, my coworker was talking about roller derby, you want to do it? And I was like, sure. and the rest is history. It's a sport unlike any other, and being on a sport or being on a team that is primarily women is just like super empowering for everyone who's involved. Even if you're not a woman, I think being involved is really wonderful to like see the kind of community that can come in a sport that takes place in a society that pits women against each other so often for competition reasons, but we have like, this really healthy competition where we're all working really, really hard, kicking each other's butts, but like for the better of the team. And just the community of Derby, like you've never seen people like snap into action so fast as when like one of our own is like injured or sick or has a tragedy happen to them. Like the Derby community is like on it, like we need to get flowers, we need to make soup, we need to take care of their dogs. Like, it's incredible, the community that is just in roller derby.
When I was young, I remember watching roller derby on TV with the bank tracks, and it was a little more like wrestling then, and you know, you'd see people clothesline and, you know, jump on somebody's back. And I liked roller skating. I wasn't good at it, but I was like, I could do that. I would always, everything I saw on TV, I could do that. So a little later on in life, I was actually watching a parade, and there were some roller derby girls in the parade, and I thought, oh my gosh, roller derby, I'm really going to do that. At the time, there wasn't a team in Lansing, so I was like, maybe I'll make my own team. Then I found out there was 40 pages of rules and thought, no, that's not going to happen. But luckily, it was a couple months to a year later, and groups started in Lansing, and I thought, awesome. And so me and my best friend, who's an NSO now, which is a non-skating official, went out to the first practice and been doing it ever since.
What was so intriguing about this sport that really grasped you and made you want to do it?
I've always liked sports, but, you know, they always seem kind of complicated. A lot of the more contact sports are guys, so there aren't too many contact sports for girls. So I was really into, it was a fast-moving, fast-paced, growing sport that was also a contact sport for women.
What's the worst injury you've had in the sport?
I haven't had anything too terrible. I have a lot of minor injuries. I've gotten torn PCL and ACL in one knee, tear in the other knee. I almost ripped my shoulder out of the socket my first tournament, so that still kind of gives me some problems. And I'm just coming back from having a sprained ankle and knee in the same leg. So
with all that being said, I mean, what keeps you coming back to this game?
Oh my gosh, it's so much fun. People break their legs and are like, you know, right back at it before they're supposed to, and then break it again and then really have to stay off of it. But it's just something that once you start doing it, you can't stop. You want to get back, you want to be around your team, you want to get back on skates. It's just so competitive. It's like, if you're not out there, you feel like you're letting your team down.
Injuries happen. There are rules in place so that they don't. Like, if you do a crappy block, you're going to get sent to the penalty box. I mean, you know, can't punch people in the face and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, with the contact sport, you're going to fall and you're going to get hit in the face on accident, sometimes by your own team. That's part of the sport, is, you know, hitting people. Luckily, we are trained really well by our coaches, captains, and other leadership. And we also have, like, you know, we work out outside of practice to build the muscles so that we don't, when we do fall, we don't get hurt. I separated my shoulder shortly after I started playing. It was awful. I was brand new, and I fell incorrectly. Rather than falling straight forward where all the padding is, I fell and landed directly on my shoulder, and now my armpits are lopsided because my shoulder bones are crunched up. So what I learned from that was, fall properly and don't take the outside when you're a jammer, because if you get hit coming around the outside curve, you're gonna go flying. So it's a learning experience, but I haven't been majorly hurt since then. That was like 2-3 years ago.
And if you could choose one word to describe this sport, what would it be and why?
Wow, okay, that's a tough one. I don't know, there's so many words going through my mind. I would say empowering, because we really are a community. There's 50 skaters, there's about 30 junior skaters, and it's just to learn how to be an athlete, to learn how to be part of a community, to be able to, it's just awesome. And I would say it's really empowering, and it helps a lot of people that maybe haven't had that opportunity in their lives or haven't been sporty, to really take control of their life and their athletic abilities. I'd never played a sport before I started roller derby.
I think I've said empowering a lot, and it's empowering just on a physical, emotional, spiritual, community, you know, nitty-gritty level. It's empowering for all the reasons, and it builds up your confidence, it builds up your strength, it builds up your, you know, your, just want to get in there and, like, take on the world after you play roller derby.
How about that? The Lansing Derby Vixens, folks. Again, you just heard the voices of Aileen Ladurl, Gina Rome, and Tease Jaray. Tease is actually a player and junior coach, and Gina and Aileen are both players for the Lansing Derby Vixens. Again, folks, we tape tonight at 6 p.m. with the Lansing Derby Vixens. More members of the team will actually be in the audience, and I'll be sitting down with two more captains to talk about this incredible and intriguing sport, to say the least. If you want to be a part of that live audience, all you got to do is go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. Well, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll talk about the turmoil that is happening in, of course, Baltimore, that has postponed the Chicago White Sox and Baltimore Orioles games. But after the first two games, again, which were postponed because of riots, they will get to play in the finale. We'll give you the details in just a sec. We'll also talk about Manny Pacquiao, John Jones, and so much more. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy April 29th out there. That's right, it is Wednesday. It's hump day, folks. And I tell you what, finally, the weather is starting to look so nice outside. The birds are chirping. The sun is out. The grass is slowly starting to turn greener and greener with each and every passing day. And we are finally starting to get a full dose of spring right now. Hopefully, you all are enjoying the weather, getting out and about and staying active. Let's see here. We got about, 10 minutes left in the show. Our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, I tell you what, with each and every passing day now, I am slowly but surely, I'm even right now as we speak, folks, I'm slowly but surely just getting butterflies every time I think about this fight. Again, Saturday, May 2nd. Floyd Money Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao will get it on in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand Casino. Again, you guys who tuned into yesterday's Current Sports during our Top 5 Tuesday segment, I gave you the top five reasons why Manny Pacquiao is going to knock down the undefeated Floyd Mayweather Jr. I gave you my reasons and backed them up. We also had Current Sports our intern, I should say, Kyrie Carter. He was on the air with me, and he took the other opposition, I should say. He thinks that Mayweather is going to win, and deservedly so. I mean, right now, for anyone to say and think that, like me, that Manny Pacquiao was going to win this Saturday, I mean, that's taking the odd way out, because, again, the easy way out is just picking Mayweather, a guy who's never lost before. So what is going to make Manny Pacquiao different? You know what I mean? You know, I remember, you know, the Marcos Maidana fight, when I was a big advocate on Marcos Maidana. After the first fight, when I saw the first fight, I'm like, okay, Maidana is a guy I really think that could potentially beat Floyd Mayweather. But you saw what happened in that second fight. He just kind of just got winded during those later rounds and ended up losing the fight. But I really think Manny Pacquiao has the stamina. That's going to be the number one reason for me. And also, he's such an unorthodox fighter while in the ring, a fighter unlike any other fighter that Floyd Mayweather has fought. And Manny Pacquiao was sort of adding some assurance to those who are picking him to win that fight on Saturday night. Manny Pacquiao, of course, is mere days away from this much-hyped fight against Floyd. And, at a rally at Mandalay Bay Hotel in Las Vegas yesterday, Manny Pacquiao said he felt confident, saying, quote, "I cannot say Mayweather is that difficult an opponent. My confidence right now is different than the other fights I had. I feel excited. This is it. I had to prove something. I know I am going to win the fight in the ring." Again, folks, this is a direct quote from Manny Pacquiao. Then he goes on to say he went Aaron Rodgers on his folks and says, quote, "So relax." How about that? I love the confidence of any fighter, to be honest with you, because I always think there's a fine line when you toe, confidence and cockiness at the end of the day. Mayweather, I think has a little bit of both of those. The reason why I'm not a big fan of Floyd Mayweather, because, you know, he's so cocky, he's so arrogant, he flaunts his money left and right. There's not a humble bone in the body of Floyd Mayweather Jr. And on the contrary, you have a fighter like Manny Pacquiao Jr., who really just it's hard not to like the guy. He says the right things. He does the right things. He's a big advocate for the Philippines, where he grew up, and is trying to rebuild that city, and also has aspirations in a pretty long-tenured political future, possibly with his native land. And I just really love what Pacquiao stands for. And very interesting, as you know, we talked about in our quick hit headliners, a disturbing story actually came out this week. Manny Pacquiao, actually, when he was young, at the age of 12, he ran away from home when he caught his father, and I kid you not, folks, eating his pet dog. Are you kidding me? Now, that's according to his trainer, Freddie Roach, a long-tenured boxing trainer, Freddie Roach. Now, Roach was talking to Yahoo Sports about the boxer's family and how they struggled with poverty in the Philippines when Manny was just a young child. And apparently things were just so tough that Manny's father cooked the family dog for food. Now, when Manny realized what had happened, he ran away from home and began to live on the streets. Roach went on to say, quote, "He slept in a cardboard box. He fought his way through all this, turned pro at the age of 14, and look at the man he is today," end quote. Wow. Unbelievable stuff right there. That's one intriguing story. Manny Pacquiao, he's one of those stories, I mean, from rags to riches, right? It's hard not to root for the guy. It's so hard not to root for the guy. It's so hard not to like him. And it's so hard, you know, not to be sitting at your TV on Saturday night and not pulling for that man in some way, shape, or form. Not many of you out there that are just sports fans and don't want to see an unblemished record on Floyd Mayweather Jr. I mean, you know, a lot of people want Floyd to retire and have that big donut next to his, 48-49-0 record, possibly. But I just don't think that's going to happen Saturday, folks. I just can't wait for this fight. A lot of hype around it. A lot of hype surrounded around it. I want to quickly give you guys my thoughts on something that has really been itching at me ever since I really saw the video and read this story. Now, of course, the story of a young African-American man by the name of Freddie Gray, and there's video, actually, of him getting arrested. He looked to be in some sort of discomfort when the arrest happened, when two or three officers threw him in the back of a patrol vehicle. And, you know, he was in a lot of discomfort. And during the ride, I guess, to the facility, the police station, he ended up passing away. Really mysterious story. Very mysterious story. And it seems as though now, about every 2 to 3 months, I'm reading or hearing about a story of a young African-American man passing away due to circumstances that certainly could have been avoided, more specifically when it comes to law enforcement. And, this kind of has a sports twist on it, because when you look at the Chicago White Sox and the Baltimore Orioles, they have been trying to partake in their series, but haven't been able to because of riots in Baltimore right now, which followed the funeral of Freddie Gray. There were a lot of upset people, and deservedly so, upset people after the funeral, and they just decided to go out and just cause havoc all over Baltimore. I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen the images, but, you know, there's individuals, you know, smashing out patrol vehicles, setting different establishments on fire, just really unnerving things going on in Baltimore right now. So after the first two games of the Chicago White Sox and Baltimore Orioles were postponed because of the riots that broke out near Camden Yards, the finale will take place. The Orioles and White Sox will play. However, there's a little catch here. The public will not be allowed to attend today's contest amid safety concerns, and the game was also moved up 5 hours to avoid conflict with the city curfew, which they enacted and begins at 10 p.m. Now, this comes from directly from Orioles Executive Vice President of Baseball Operations, Dan Duquette. He says, quote, "It would have been very difficult to make up all three games, so we needed to play that game on Wednesday. You just try to do the best you can in this kind of situation." But how sad is it, folks? I mean, watching this coverage over the past 2 to 3 days now, of what has gone down in Baltimore. First off, I want to say being a young African-American male in society, first off, let's be honest here, it was upsetting for me to see yet another incident. I mean, with the Trayvon Martins and Michael, I forget the young man, Michael Brown, when that whole thing popped off that led to the, you know, Black Lives Matter movement. I mean, it's just upsetting that, again, it seems as though every 2 to 3 months we have to turn on our televisions and see another story of a young African-American man's life being taken and being ended that could have been obviously avoided. I was upset. I'm not going to lie with you guys. I was upset when I heard the story of Freddie Gray. It certainly rubbed me the wrong way. I tweeted out some things. I tweeted out my thoughts about the riots that ensued right after. And for me, yeah, I get the anger. I get the anger. I get the frustration that's going on in our nation right now, more specifically with this case in the city of Baltimore right now. I get it. People are angry. People want change. And people feel as though it's not right. They want answers. And they deserve answers. Totally agree. But for me, folks, we are going about it the wrong way. The total wrong way, folks. What is looting and setting buildings on fire and causing destruction? What is that doing to help the situation? And it was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you see people just jumping on cars and knocking out windows and throwing rocks at the police. I believe that we have forgotten how to invoke change in our society today. I always look at the past and what has worked in the past. And of course, the main mantra and the main symbol that I always turn to is, of course, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was able to evoke change through nonviolence and through nonviolence protesting. That's how it worked, folks. I understand the anger, but going out in society and looting and causing destruction on your own city, you are tearing apart your own city, folks. That is just not the way to go around it. And I just had to get that off my chest, man, because it's been something that has been bothering me every time I turn on my TV and hear about it. And, man, we need some change, folks. We need some change, but we need change in the right way. There's a right way and a wrong way to go about things, and what you are seeing in Baltimore is totally the wrong way. Folks, I want to give a special thanks to the Lansing Derby Vixens and appreciate their time and letting me attend practice yesterday. Again, they are my guest on tonight's Current Sports TV taping. Again, if you want to be a part of that live taping, just simply go to WKAR.org and show up right here at our WKAR TV studios on the campus of Michigan State at 6 p.m. I want to give a special shout out to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. On tomorrow's show, we have the privilege of inviting Jeremy Sampson. That's right, the owner of the minor league soccer team here in Lansing, Michigan, Lansing United. He'll talk about the upcoming season. And on Friday, we'll actually have Andre Hudson. That's right, former Michigan State men's basketball great. He'll talk about Conquest Fitness, his health fitness initiative, as they have a pretty cool event coming up. All right, folks, as always, take care. Have one fantastic afternoon. And as always, be easy, people.